Welcome to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, where we use popular culture to learn about history. It was this week in 1917 that the United States entered World War I, so what better time than now to dissect the song that is forever attached to America's involvement in the Great War. Conference for the National Council for the Social Studies. You're from Florida?
I am, yes.
Florida is a pretty big state. Which part of Florida are we talking?
I'm from the west coast of Florida, the Lehigh Acres area, Fort Myers,
okay.
About halfway between Tampa and Miami.
All right. And is that the part of Florida that's really known for lots of big thunderstorms, lots of lightning? Or is that more
specific
Tampa?
Well, pretty much all
Tampa?
Of Florida
yeah.
is a lot of thunder
I've been there
and
for
lightning.
A thunderstorm. It can be, whoa, that's a different thing.
Our unfortunate legacy right now is that we get hit pretty awfully by hurricanes that start with I. Irma, Ian, Idalia.
So once you get to that part of the alphabet, you're like, oh.
We're done.
Yeah.
It's school's canceled. Just like yeah. stock up on water and toilet paper and hope for the best.
Are you a Florida native?
I am not. I actually was born in New Jersey.
Okay.
But I've been down in Florida long enough to consider myself a Floridian.
Yeah, I think that's one of those states where it doesn't take long to become a native, right? Like a lot of transplants. So
it takes you a little while to get used to the weather, the bugs, the constant humidity.
Yeah.
And like living up north, you see the leaves change. You know that autumn has hit Florida when you see the license plates change.
That's a good way of putting it. You tell me that in your classroom, you like to use, when teaching World War I, a great example of pop culture. And, you know, in that 1910s era, that's kind of like the, you know, speaking of storms, that's the calm before the storm of mass media. You know, the 1920s is really when it hit, but it was already starting to churn up with music. And so you said the song by George, is it M. Cohan, right?
Yes, George M. Cohan.
And it's Over There.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people have at least heard it because it tends to be placed into media pretty, you know, pretty consistently over the last 100 years. They'll put it into commercials. Or I remember the first time I ever heard it being sung was in the movie The Babe with
mm-hmm.
John Goodman. Because,
yes.
you know, when he gets traded to the Yankees, they, you know, the Yanks are coming. And they start doing that. But I thought this question would be good of why did they make it?
Well, before I answer that question, it's like looking at the idea that everything is a primary source. One of the things that I try to do in my class, since I do have the like privilege of teaching U.S. history, is when I'm able to play a song or show images from the time period we're looking at, I use those to really sort of flesh out the kids' understanding
yeah.
of it. So like when we're doing our opening question for the day to get them sort of in the mindset of history, if I can, I'll play music of the time period.
Yeah.
And since we're doing World War I currently, I wanted to play them the 1917 Nora Bayes recording of Over There. And the big question of like, why did Cohan write the song? Well, it's George M. Cohan. If there's a tiny little speck of patriotism in any of the songs, it's probably going to be Cohan related somehow.
Yeah.
But I think the reason that he wrote it is honestly to get America on board with the war effort since we had been neutral for so long.
Yeah.
We had been so anti-Great War for so long. I mean, if you look at Wilson, the election of 1916, he went with the idea of he kept us out of the war.
Yeah.
Something had to happen to keep people supportive of it. So past the Lusitania, past all of the notes and boats that brought us into the war, something had to be done that the soldiers could use to sort of give them hope, to inspire them. Something had to be given to the civilians to sing, to show in support of the soldiers. And something had to happen to bring those two groups together, the serving soldiers, those who are going, and those, the families and friends that they're leaving behind.
Mm.
And I really think the song Over There is one of those instances where a simple song that could be used as a cadence or almost like a patriotic hymn really brought those groups together at a time where America needed to be brought together a lot.
Yeah. No, I think thank you so much. I'm glad we're talking about this with a history teacher, because this is exactly, you're describing of like immersing your students into the time period. It's almost like, compared to like to the Google Maps, like you can put the guy right into the map and look around you. And so the more music, media, everything that you have, it makes it that much easier to learn the era. Speaking of music and wars, it seems like, I mean, since the beginning of the United States, there's been that relationship of messaging through music to the population. You know, I think about the Civil War. You know, the Battle Hymn of the Republic tends to get the attention in the modern era as being like the song, but it was more Battle Cry of Freedom. That seemed to be the one, and the fact that it was adopted, a version of it for both sides of the mm-hmm. conflict, really says it there. I would say by 1916, 1917, the disunion of the country was still haunting it, that Reconstruction really hadn't fully completed. And the Spanish-American War had its own aspects of it. You know, they put a former Union general and a Confederate general at the command of that army to invade Cuba. The music, the imagery was trying to go forward with that idea of unity. And then, so, you know, they're not going to give up on that with 1917 either, of, you know, it's referring to all of these guys as Yanks, mm-hmm. you know, because, like, here we are in Nashville. I know you're in Florida, but you're from New Jersey. So
still in the South also. So.
We're Yankees just by being from the North. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the North, Yankee means specifically New Englanders. You know, not the New York team, but, you know, a Yankee person is specifically New England. But outside of the country, any American is considered a Yankee. So you just go up to Canada, they're like, hey, Yank, you know, if you're from Texas, you're a Yank. And it's like that song, I wonder if that song kind of marks the beginning of that usage of the term, the Yanks are coming, you know, to mm-hmm. try to... because it was made, you know, the audience was everybody. It wasn't just the Northeast. There's anything to that way of thinking, that this was it was just part of the culture to any chance you could get, continue to beat the drum of we need to be one country?
Well, going back to some of the things that you said, I really think that music has been a very valid medium in wartime. You're right, like even since the American Revolution, Yankee Doodle, for example,
which is referenced in this song.
Exactly. With the Civil War, you have those anthems on both sides. You do have the Battle Hymn of the Republic. You do have Battle Cry of Freedom. But on the other side, you have, like, the Bonnie Blue.
Yeah.
You have When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again. You have Dixie. That disunion. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that, like, with the Civil War, that generation, at least when you look at it, were almost anxious to go to war because they hadn't had their shot at glory like their ancestors had had with the Revolution. I think by the time we get to World War I, especially with as recent as Spanish-American War was, we don't want war. We don't mm-hmm. want to live with that, just the rationing, the loss, the PTSD. So we did need something to bring everybody together. And if you even look at literacy rates, not everybody is going to be literate. Not everybody's going to read a pamphlet. Not everybody's going to read a book or a poster. But everybody can understand music. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when you get to World War I, when you get to over there, it's a valid idea that all Americans become Yanks mm-hmm. because of that song. But I think it's also the idea of bringing the country together after the war under the Union flag.
Right.
Aren't we sort of all Yanks anyway as a result of that? Would that terminology have been different had the South won?
Right.
So, yes, bring everybody to back together under that one flag and make everybody Yanks. And now, even that term, every American is a Yank, brings that idea of unity together, much like use of that song was, I think, partially intended to bring everyone together. And so by Europe breaking apart, maybe World War I and the music stemming from that conflict was a way to bring America together under one flag, one union, one ideology.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the immigrant population that was swelling by 1917, and that being involved in a war effort, either by being a soldier or supporting, like you said at the start of this, as being a baptism to become a American citizen,
mm-hmm.
you know, and being able to say, I had a part in getting us, you know, being part of the United States. You look at like the posters, you know, from that time period, recruitment posters from World War One. I can think of two right now. One of them is showing immigrants arriving in New York Harbor, and it's for raising war bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "Remember that thrill of liberty, you know, when you first got here. Consider that when you are buying bonds to support this conflict against your cousins in Europe." Another one, which shows a black grandfather and his grandson, like a young man, and he has his arm around him, and he's showing him like this big field of the sun rising, and on one side is an African-American trooper, and on the other side is Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, the message is very clear. There's not a lot of words on that one, again, because what you're saying about literacy rates and things, but it's getting across the idea of, through military service, you become an American, you become a comrade of the other soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And military duty does have that possibility of overcoming race and ethnic barriers, that if you are brothers in arms in the trenches of Europe.
Maybe not in Wilson's army, but...
Right, that was a segregated army,
yeah,
but wearing the uniform of the United States, even if you're not serving with white troops, I mean, the Bonus Army in the 30s demonstrated that because, and I just paraphrased a historian who was talking about the Bonus Army a moment ago, where he said in those camps that the Bonus Army made that they, white troops and you know, white veterans and black veterans, getting along just fine. And it was just like, that's because they both had, even if they served separately from each other, they had similar experiences. And then the post-war experiences were also very similar in that they had trouble finding work right away. And, you know, when the Depression came, they suffered similarly, and that's why they were all there. So unity doesn't always mean happy unity. You know, we unify over other things too. But Cohen's song, just to go back to the root of this conversation, do you think that from him, was it like a sense of patriotism and national pride, or was it, hey, I can make some money out of this? Because there's a music industry by that point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, specifically George M. Cohan. If you look, and you know, if you're also a moviephile like I am, a filmophile, watch Yankee Doodle Dandy with James Cagney. Love it. But look at the body of Cohan's work. I mean, you have John Philip Sousa for those wonderful instrumentals, patriotically speaking. Cohan becomes the lyricist and instrumental for A Nation. Because of him, look what we've got. Grand Old Flag. That's not a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Over There. That's not a one shot. Mm-hmm. You've got Yankee Doodle Dandy.
They're much jazzier than Sousa marches.
So the idea of Cohan, like he even, according to folklore, changed his birthday on his birth certificate to July 4th.
Just so the song would be correct. Born on the 4th of July.
Exactly. So I think if you take the body of his work, I would say, yeah, there's a money-making aspect to it. But I think that money-making aspect is secondary to his love of his country and what to him it not only did represent, but could represent if you were able to bring people together in a way that would make good things happen.
Yeah, and especially exporting that culture through the military to Europe, and you know, being like the saviors. That song's all about, and we're not coming back until we straighten out Europe's mess. Well, I mean, I haven't really argued, but I have had debates with a European, actually a Turkish friend of mine, so he has a totally different view of World War One. But, you know, I've said that, like, the United States is the one that ended World War One. He's like, I don't know about that. I'm like, no, they did, because the Germans didn't have an Eastern Front anymore. They were able to put all, you know, it was looking bad for the Allies.
Zimmerman telegram didn't quite work out like we thought.
Yeah. They kind of stepped in that one. But, I mean, the reason why it was such short for us is because we did show up. You know, if we hadn't, who knows how much longer that war would have gone on for and how much more. You know, World War II tends to get a lot more of the attention as far as, like, decimated cities in its wake. But World War One had similar devastation, too. It's just, most images are just trenches. But cities were pulverized, you know, by bombs and artillery going to and fro.
And then you have the entire lost generation. I mean, that speaks to the historical importance of World War One. And within that, speaking of the historical importance of World War One, you have to look at all of those aspects. You have to look at the posters, the patriotism posters. You have to look at the different food measures and fuel rationing measures. You have to look at the legislatures and all the different rules that are going through, and you have to look at the music to really understand what America is going through, which is totally new to all of us, and the methods that we're using to try to get through it, each in our own way, according to whatever function it is we can serve, be it actually in the trenches or at home, keeping the light on for those in the trenches, or doing what we can to support those that are over there.
The industry needed to support it, you know, alone.
Exactly.
We'll end on this, but I'm glad you brought up Lost Generation stuff, because I feel like that, by the 20s, when a lot of people were disillusioned by the experience of war, like, what did we get out of this? Why did we fight that war? Why did we leave so many guys over there?
Mm-hmm.
Dead, and those who came back, so many of them were just deformed from traumatized by it. What was that all for? That songs like this, I'm curious if people in that generation kind of didn't want anything to do with Over There and Yankee Doodle Dandy and all that pre-war jingoistic, you know, stuff, because they're like, yeah, look where it got me. I'm not so happy about this.
Well, how would more modern veterans think about some more patriotic songs of today? I think it really is on a case-by-case basis. But if you look at the devastation, both physical and mental, of our troops in World War One, I can very easily see why songs like Over There, and like the, let's just say the Cohan catalog, would not have been popular for that generation, because they lived it and they realized it was not sugar and rainbows and, you know, happy unicorns. But I think also,
I like that song of his too, Sugar Rainbow Happy Unicorns.
Well, what can I say? You know,
it ended up on the floor.
It's a forgotten favorite.
The deep cut.
But I think what songs like that can teach us today is that the need to really explore that further in a way that wouldn't have been possible back then because of the people living through it and not wanting to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like Vietnam vets. So I personally love using songs like Over There and Yankee Doodle Dandy, Grand Old Flag, only because it gives us that small glimpse into how people thought, and then we can use other musical pieces later on, like just pretty much anything from the Roaring Twenties, to look at how people reacted to the entire post-war situation.
This has been a wonderful conversation. I'm glad I reached out to you and we had that exchange on our way here, and thank you so much for coming by the the table. And
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Great rest of the conference.
Everything is a Primary Source is building a digital archive, and you can get involved. Perhaps you would like to add to this conversation, or start a new one about history through pop culture. Go to everything-history.com to learn about the Everything is a Primary Source project and how you can take part in this exciting, new, open-source educational resource.